world's knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is a special episode. We're calling it 393.5, which implies it'll be an hour or less, probably. It could go a little over. There's been a lot of hubbub about legal episodes like we did with Christopher Hauser. Just so everyone knows, since this episode will be turned around quite quickly, we spoke with him again because I started getting emails saying, oh, there's all these new charges. There's no new charges. Everyone's digging up emails from years ago that he talked about on the air. But there are lots of questions, and I appreciate questions. That means someone's trying to figure out what's what. Before we came on, Rose mentioned to me that people need to know what they're doing when they get into legal activities. Are they willing to go to jail to stick up for what they think is correct? Are they just trying to live their life? Are they just seeking a legal remedy? These are big ideas. Look at Paul Enslaved. He'll go to jail to stand up for what he thinks is correct. Mr. Hauser, bit similar. There are other people. I think the average individual listening probably doesn't want to be charged with a crime or anything that would have to do with doing jail time. And I think this is critically important. Anyhow, Jason Lingren is with me, and we have asked KL back. The reason we have asked KL back is most people respect what he has to talk about, to confirm or deny what's appropriate. In these law groups, there is so much infighting, so much disagreement. It makes what Jason and I are trying to do very difficult, but we're going to talk a little bit about trusts. We're going to talk probably a little bit more about liens. So there it is. Welcome, Jason.
And good afternoon.
Anything you want to cue up before we start barraging KL with questions?
Yes. Division gets us nowhere.
I agree.
There's a key point.
Yeah, when you first asked me out a year and a half ago or so, you know, I have listened to a lot of your episodes and everything, and some people can accomplish some things. That's the whole point. And they might use a different technique, a different process. They might come at it differently. So I'm going to tell you right now that most of the time, things can be done differently. It's the old phrase, there's more than one way to skin a cat. It doesn't have to be done exactly one way at all. I'm just telling you for hundreds and hundreds of experiences.
That's a key point. We've said it so many times that there are so many ways seemingly to go at this. And what Jason and I try to do is what works. And by the way, with regard to Christopher Hauser, that man's got a heart of gold. He's putting it all on the line for what he feels is correct. Now, there's going to be a big outcome in early April, maybe however many weeks it tells, you know, the court takes. If they do overturn those things, that's proof in the pudding, my friends. But let's get into this. There's two things I want to touch on. Let's just open up with liens. Liens are a serious thing, and I have problems with how I hear so many people talk about it. Now, don't get me wrong. If some, I don't know, a judge or some person in authority who has the power to change the spin of our fake spinning world does a horrible thing, it's one thing to consider a lien. But to use a lien in any other way is, I mean, you're going to get the individual you're liening, their wife, their kids, possibly their unborn grandchildren that were looking for an inheritance. It's like throwing a grenade into a McDonald's most of the time when I see it. So let's get into this for a minute, KL. Are liens here because they were legitimately set up? I mean, why are liens possible, or what are they typically used for?
Well, in the commercial world, it's a claim. You got to think of a lien as really a notice of a claim. So, you know, a couple of analogies. One would be you're building a house, you're hiring an electrician to come do work, and you agree to do $3,000, and somehow you don't think you did a good job, and you paid him $2,000. So he can put what's called a commercial lien on the title to your house for that $1,000 you didn't pay. Now, nothing happens until you try to go sell that house. And then they're not going to let you, the title company won't let you sell the house unless you clear up that debt. Now, a lien is normally filed on a UCC-1 basis with the Secretary of State in the respective state. So that's kind of an example of what one is and how it works. Now, the earlier you had reported or you were talking about putting liens on maybe these public officials, that could be very dangerous because basically you're acting in a very adversarial, warlike fashion. You're going after them where it's going to hit them. In other words, let's say you put a lien on a judge. That means it can affect his credit card. you know, access or his wife's access to the family credit card. It can affect their ability to sell the house. Anything that they have an asset in, it can be affected. So they're going to come after you very, very hard nowadays. Now, there were some people in the past that had done it. It really didn't happen often. But lately, not that necessarily it's Mr. Hauser, but other people have done it. And the system is well prepared for anyone that comes forward with any kind of lien against them at this point. I'm just telling you.
So let me ask you a few questions about liens. First of all, you hear about people who have been imprisoned, they feel they've been imprisoned wrongly, or many things where they feel they've been railroaded by the legal system. Mm-hmm. When they put a lien, is it almost always on someone's house, or could it be on their paycheck? What is a lien typically placed against? What would be a common usage in the way that we're all familiar with hearing about?
Well, it has to be put against their all caps entity name on a UCC-1 with the Secretary of State. So any property that they have that is in that name, that's what can be affected.
Everything they own, in other words.
Everything they own. Cars, boats, houses, bank accounts, everything. Everything in that straw man name, which is commerce, everything commercial, would be affected or could be affected.
So the real truth is like we hear people have done horrible things, prison guards and other things, and they put a lien, but this is the other sticky wicket. If an individual does a horrible thing, should his wife, his children, his family all be swooped in to what he's done? Now, I'm sure some people listening will say, hell yeah. And I'm even more sure some people listening will say, no way. But that's really what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes. And I'm going to agree with you. And here's why. All public officials are bonded. I'll repeat that. All public officials are bonded, whether he's the warden, whether he's just the guard that's been there a week. There's an insurance bond against him causing harm against someone. So why not just file a claim with the insurance company? That way, you're just affecting him and you're not affecting the family. I agree with you. I personally would never do a lien. I would do a claim on the bond that they hold. And that then you're dealing with the insurance company. You're not dealing with them at all. The insurance company is going to settle it. More than likely, if they find the claim to be valid. Now, most public officials today have a surety bond, what's called $5 million. Now, surety, you got to look that up in blacks. Surety means taking on the debtor obligation of another. So there's this bond against the guard for $5 million. Let's say he kills or maims, you know, one of the prisoners. The family files a claim and gets the $5 million from the insurance company. That guard now loses his job because he cannot be insured. He cannot be bonded. So he will lose his job whether the facility wants to fire him or not. The insurance company will make sure he doesn't work. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. In other words, I think if I'm following you correctly, I don't want to make the blanket statement that there's no place in this world for liens. For one, I don't know enough. But from my point of view, if you're going to take an action on someone, you damn well better sit down and figure out possibly how many lives you're going to affect, first of all. That's a critical thing from my point of view, because if you don't, you're not acting in honor. If you just start humming bombs into places where Lord knows how many people are going to be affected, I don't agree with it. But let's get back to the lien, because there's so much I don't know. How does a lien ever end? So if someone gets a lien put on everything they own in their all caps name, what ever ends that lien?
There's only one person that can remove a lien, and that's the person that initiated the lien. So they have to do, I believe it's a UCC-3, which is a termination. So there's a form, but only the person. No one else can take that lien off. Only the person that initiated. That's why it's hard to get them off once you put them on. All right? So yeah. I'm just telling you, the system is well aware of people that are going that route, and they're coming that they're going to return fire. How's that? Let me give you an example, another analogy. You ever heard of a guy named Winston Trout? Okay, old guru. He did 276, what we call A for value, where he paid for stuff out of his account. Never had a problem. Then comes along, you know, 20 years later, he puts a lien on the Federal Reserve for $7 trillion. Guess what happened?
I'm guessing it's not good.
They came after him. And then they put him on trial for all of those 276 negotiable instruments that he created. And of course, now said they were fake. And of course, he was convicted. Okay.
So, but let's stop there for a second. So is that a legitimate statement that offsetting debt with the trust, if I'm even saying that the right way, is indefensible? And you said 20 years, so I'm guessing there's no statute of limitations. I mean, I've got so many questions.
Well, what I'm saying is the negotiable interest fee made was correct, but you got to understand now what they're going to do is put this in front of a jury. Go look, he wrote on this piece of paper this gobbledygook, and the next thing you know, you got a new car, a new house. It wouldn't be hard to convince your average Joe who right. doesn't understand any of these security laws that it was fake and not real, even though it had to have been real by law because they accepted it. That's what I'm saying.
Such a critical point. And one of the things I really wanted to get in here, because first of all, if you do a thing and there's lenders and banks and everyone involved and it's allowed to happen, then clearly there's some legitimacy here. But my concern is it's the same conundrum for me. I know there's going to be people out there listening that say, what the hell? I worked my ass off for the vehicle that I drive and not be down with it. So I think the point you just made is critical, because go ahead and get a jury in there, and all those people in the jury are going to think, you know what? I worked for Lord knows how many months to afford the vehicle that I'm driving, and they're probably not going to be down with it. But nonetheless, clearly there's legitimacy there, or it wouldn't be possible in the first place.
Yes. Now, wait a second. There's another point here, I think. They didn't seem to give a rat's ass when he did things for himself just on a smaller level. But when he tried to do things on a massive scale by going after the IRS itself, then they had a problem.
Absolutely correct. Because now they have to make an example out of it. This is how government works. Yeah.
Strategy. KL just laid it down. He did a thing that was permissible within the system, which tells you something of its legitimacy. But they knew damn well that the public at large is so inured by the system that it would be easy to convince them that this is all somehow a fake charade. And that's, you know, it almost makes me feel like in that position, you should avoid a jury trial at all costs.
Yes. And then let me give you another lady I know who's now my student, but wasn't before. She had some kind of trial or whatever, called the judge, said he was, was committing treason, filed a lien against them. Next thing you know, they threw her in jail. For about a year, they took all her property and all her money, and she never got anything back. You wow. see what can happen? Yeah. If you don't know what you're doing, it's not as simple as it sounds.
No, it's not. Jason and I did not put this episode together for any other reason but to ask all these questions people are asking us. And the truth be told, we're not impugning anyone. There's a Christopher Hauser, there's about to be a Supreme Court case. That's going to speak volumes, isn't it? And this is not even close to being worked out. There's all these other things going on. And I will constantly say the proof is in the pudding. Did the car seller allow you to write against a trust? Did the bank accept it? Well, that tells you something about the legitimacy. How can you possibly tell someone that what they're doing is fake or fraudulent if those systems are prepared and competent to do what's being put in play? By the same token, you get in trouble with the big boys and they'll use every tool they got in their tool bag. And since most of us think that there's no way to buy a car or a house in this manner, that's why we're having this episode. And the proof will be in the pudding on part of what we just covered when the outcome of the Tennessee State Supreme Court thing comes on. Jason, I feel like there were a couple other things that we wanted to try to outline with Kale that I'm not thinking of. Do you think anything I've dropped?
Well, he's thinking. I'm going to give you one more analogy. 10 years ago, people were doing what's called 1099 OIDs, okay, and they were getting money for it. Okay, and the government let this happen for about 3 years, and then they went out and arrested every single person that had done it. I think there were just about 300 people. And all 300 of them went to jail. Okay. So again, hesitancy, it might be working. It looks like it works. Work for somebody else. I'm just saying, be careful. You got to know what you're doing when you do these kinds of things. Would that make sense?
Yeah, well, one thing, I mean, anyone can logically work out that the system is gaming us all. For us to even be talking about this trust in our all caps names, we've been gamed. So if the system has gamed us at that level, what do you think the system might be capable of? Is what I'm pointing out. If they want to put you in the crosshairs, not only do you need to know what you're doing, but is it worth it? Is it worth the risk?
Well, is it worth the risk? And then you got to understand they're going to bring you into their jurisdiction. So you got to know how not to get into their jurisdiction or not to surrender to their jurisdiction. So it goes beyond just even know how to do this stuff by accessing the trust. You better have your political status corrected so you can't be brought into their jurisdiction. That's another issue to this.
Yeah, there's just so much to know with all these legal things. It's I feel like we could do two shows a week and still be learning at the end of 5 years.
Okay, well, you talked about liens. Liens are with the UCC. UCC is under Article 1 jurisdiction, the C jurisdiction, the bank jurisdiction, the jurisdiction that every state court is in right now. That's where bad things can happen to you, right?
Yeah.
So you're in their, you're playing in their sandbox. So you better be playing by their rules is all I'm saying.
Do you feel like there's any legitimate use for offsetting a debt of some kind against the so-called trust in your all caps name?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But that's on the private side, not the public side. So again, you know, I say public, private, that's getting back whether you're in the C jurisdiction or the land jurisdiction. That means you're either in Article 1 or Article 3 jurisdiction. So in the private, see, all those accounts that people want to get a hold of or access to are in the private, okay? Private accounts. They're not secret, they're private, which means they're just for private certain things. And yes, all of those funds are in trust accounts. That's the other thing you got to understand. Who can make a claim on a trust? Well, there's only one party that can bring a claim against a trust, and that's the beneficiary. The trustee can't, the grantor can't. Only a beneficiary can bring a claim against a trust. They're the only ones with the right to do that. So one of the legal formalities that I try to teach people is if you even think you're even going to make a claim on anything or anyone, you got to make sure you can prove you're the beneficiary of a trust in order to make the claim.
Because if you can do that, you've legitimized what you're doing.
Right. Again, I'm going to bring in Alphonse here. When Alphonse always does the counterclaim, what's he really doing? He doesn't even understand trust law, but I can tell you what he's doing with a counterclaim is he's claiming he's the beneficiary. He doesn't even have to say he is, but by making the counterclaim against someone, he is the assumption that he is the beneficiary making the claim. Do you see my point?
Yes.
So his stuff can work without him even knowing anything about trust law. It's all because the court understands he's coming forth as the beneficiary. The system will recognize him most of the time in the right way by what he says or what he does. Just like Hauser, if he says or does certain things, the system will recognize what position in the trust you are. I got to bring up the thing about his property and the two gold coins with his buddy.
No, wait a minute. That was the statement he made about purchasing a thing with either gold or silver?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in the private, okay, and in trust law, okay, when you put lawful money, and gold coin is obviously lawful money, okay, on the deed or when the purchaser, it has to come from the grantor over to the person buying it. Okay, when you have, that's called valuable consideration. So when you have lawful money that passes with the sale, the legal title moves. So the legal title to the property moved over to him when he bought it. Now the county, when he showed him the paperwork, recognized because he used two gold coins that the legal title went with him, and that's why he was the had ownership. He had legal title to the property. Okay, so normally, if you register a deed, you're giving up the legal title to the county. That's why they can say, well, you got to pay us property taxes. You keep beneficial title, which is use and possession of the asset. You get use of the land, possession of the building, whatever it is. But the controlling interest, the legal title, is always usually held with the state or the county. If you could prove that it belongs to you, okay, which he could, even though he might not even know what he was doing, but because he used the gold coin, the county officials recognize that, oh my God, he's got legal title. We can't tax him on this. Okay.
So let's just put this process plain and clear. We got a version of it during the Hauser episode. We've got KL on. So KL, I want to buy the land that's next to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I buy that land with cash or a check or something like that, it's a typical thing that we always see. There's nothing different than any other buying and selling we see, but there is a difference if I use gold or silver.
Right. But the gold or silver has actually got to come from the guy selling it to you. It's got to pass in that fashion, not from you to him, but from him to you. Okay.
Well, I'm buying the land, so I need to give the gold or silver to the person I'm buying it from.
Right. And then make sure you write it down, or you actually, I glue it onto the deed and I keep the deed so that the legal title will pass. But let me go on from now. Now, when you buy a car now or a house, did you put a silver coin on any of the paperwork? Say no.
No.
Okay. So the legal title never moved. All you ever got for the house was the equitable title, which was use and possession of it. So that's why the state who controls legal title can tell you, you got to have insurance, you got to have a sticker, you got to have plates. The county with the home, because they kept legal title, because it didn't pass to you, they can say you got to pay property taxes. See?
What if the total, say, okay, I'm buying a vehicle. I go in, let's say I pay for 3/4 of it the way people do with a check or with greenbacks money.
Right.
And but the remainder, I pay with gold or silver. Is it the same situation?
Yeah, because you still use Federal Reserve notes, which is an IOU, which is debt, which is not lawful money.
So it has to be in totality with specie.
Yes.
Or gold or silver.
Correct.
Okay.
So it sounds like you're completing the transaction with the
lawful, right?
Right, with the lawful money.
How can you truly buy something if you give somebody an IOU? Is it really yours? If you just give someone and they hand over an IOU and they give it to you, so again, you have possession, is that really legally yours? That's what I'm asking you to think about.
We don't think about these things because we've been doing it so long. When we're faced with actually logically working it out, yeah, I'm handing you an IOU that you're going to hand to someone else.
Sounds like another continuation of their trap too, that you're using their debt instrument as opposed to real money, and it keeps you in their system with everything.
Yes. Yes.
It's diabolical. They're brilliant.
In 1933, when they took away the money, that's when everything happened. When they took away the lawful money, it was tremendous what had to have happened. Everything went to heck in a handbasket, right? Because they started bringing in two citizenships, two forms of governments, two different kinds of states. Everything had to bring in an artificial side to everything, right? Instead of a real title, you get an artificial title. It's called a deed when you buy it with IOUs. A deed is not a title. A deed is just the word they use to describe what you think means title or ownership. It doesn't. You see how they fool you?
If someone wanted to get their title, that bought a house in the typical way we're all used to buying a house, they wrote checks, they made payments with checks, they mm-hmm. used the Federal Reserve, and one day they woke up and said, you know what? I want the title to this house. I understand what's been done. I understand how I was gamed because I didn't comprehend. What could they do to try to get that title into their ownership after the fact of the purchase?
There's two ways that I know that work for sure. One way is to go to the BLM and get what we call a land patent. There's a guy by the name of Ron Gibson, sells a book, tells you how to do it. It's worked for everybody I've ever known to refer to him. But you have to do some research on the title of the property itself, then apply to the Bureau of Land Management. They'll give you a land patent, which you walk right over to the tax assessor's office, show it to them, and they'll take you off the tax rolls, the property. Now, the other way is to have lawful money on the contract when it sells. Now, you don't have to have the same amount. Let's say you're buying a house for $100,000, FRNs. I'm sorry, not that, you know. You don't need $100,000 worth of gold or silver. You need a minimum of $21 worth of silver or gold. I believe that's in the Constitution. But all it takes is about $21 worth of lawful money to have the legal title passed to the next person.
So, I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but I got questions.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so let's say, like a lot of families out there, there's, you know, their family home is in a trust with their family name. Mm-hmm. Could the family get together and the family trust and sell it to one individual in the family for the gold or silver to obtain ownership?
Yep. That's exactly what you can do.
Oh, my word.
Yes. And then it comes off. If you can take the deed you make up. There's another thing about the deed. When you got to do this stuff, you can do a quick claim deed. I think most people know what those are. Or you can find them on the internet and Google them real easy. But a quick claim deed, one with the silver on it. I glue it actually right on it. And then you have to describe the property in meets and bounds, not 2103 Colonial Drive, Woodland Hills Subdivision, Plot A. That's their definition of a parcel. Okay. A parcel ID is a piece of property that they can tax. But a meets and bounds, do you know what a meets and bounds is, either one of you?
Isn't it actual real measurement of some kind?
That's latitude and longitude of the property.
Right. Okay.
So you can either pay for a surveyor to do it, or you can get on Google the maps, Google Maps, and touch the four corners of your property, and it'll give you the exact latitude and longitude of each corner. That's called meets and bounds. That's the lawful description of the property. So we get back to, you have to get back to lawful money and lawful description of the property for the legal title to pass over.
Hey, all you crypto people, are you hearing what we're laying down? Just to give out a big poke in the eye, because people love to try to beat me up over crypto. Now, based on what we've just said, look how much further away from reality crypto will take us in just this one instance of, can I own anything in this world?
Well, see, in trust law, own means equitable title, just possession. Okay, that does not mean legal title. Ownership in trust law is legal title. So they've convinced everybody that the word owner means you have legal title. I'm telling you, that's another way they fooled you again. Owner means you have possession. You're the equitable title holder. It does not have anything to do with legal title in their jurisdiction. Okay? Yeah. You're not owner of the car, as in you own legal title to it. Owner's registration or owner of the car means you have use and possession of the car.
Okay? Hey, Jason, slap me across the face really hard so I can be sure I'm awake.
Okay, so if you make 25 out of 30 payments or whatever, and you don't make the last two or three, the bank comes and repossesses the entire car, right?
Right.
As if you had no equity in it, you didn't own anything in it. They take the whole damn thing back legally. The reason is because you never had legal title to the car in the first place. All you were given, and all that's given on the purple title that the state will give you, is use and possession. That's all you get. All right.
Well, this must start to speak to things like eminent domain, right? What would happen if they were trying to use eminent domain on someone who'd actually bought in gold or silver, and, if I'm using the right words, held actual title?
They can't.
There's no legal process that would allow that.
Right. But publicly registered property is a different issue.
Right.
Register comes from the word regal. Regal meant give to the king. When you register any property, whether it be a car, a house, a birth certificate, a name, you're giving away the legal title to the government. You're voluntarily doing it. You're voluntarily consenting. They've tricked you. They've deceived you. Okay?
So does that take it out of the private and keep it in the corporate world by registering with them?
Until you make a claim. And who did I say is the only one that can make a claim for the legal title to the car or the house? There's only one person.
The owner.
Beneficiary.
Beneficiary, yeah.
Yes. The owner, correct. The owner means beneficiary.
Right. So while we're here, how about doing a short public service announcement about what crypto means? Because if I say it again, people will just keep throwing tomatoes.
Well, they can throw them at me all they want. I don't use crypto, because you get equitable title to an account, right? Who's got legal title? Where is it? It's in a trust agreement. You're getting equitable use of the account, right? Whether it's keys, right? Or an account number, you're getting use of it, correct?
I guess, yeah, it must be.
Okay. Where is it?
It's an imaginary electron on the head of a pin somewhere.
So if somebody just calls you or emails you one day and says, hey, our servers went down, your money's lost, would you even know who to go after?
Good point.
I'm just throwing that out as a possibility. Oh, we were hacked. It's all gone.
Well, they covered that base. You know, there was some guy that they trotted out in the news that had millions of dollars in crypto, but he couldn't remember his password. And he only got three tries or some nonsense like that before he lost it. And he'd already tried twice. Isn't that pretty much a summoning, you know, event to the public that this is a shell game?
I think so. Didn't they just announce that I think it was Coinbase who shut off 24,000 Russian accounts? Now, did they shut them out of their money completely, or they're just not letting them use it and they're keeping a balance? I mean, you got to ask these kinds of questions. How did they get the power? How did our government, quote, slash bankers, have the power to go to Coinbase and shut off their accounts or to just seize their balances? Unless it was all set up from the start that they were going to be able to do that. You see what a red light? That should have been a red light to everybody.
All of it. You'd have to be out of your freaking mind to ever sell somebody gold or silver if they were paying you crypto. Knowing what we know, you would have to be delusional to do such a thing.
Thank you. I agree.
Anyhow, for all the people in crypto, I'm not trying to be a dick here. I'm trying to point out this started for me as a spiritual problem. That cracked bell rang and I heard it loud and clear. And I knew this is not right. So I started to pay attention. Spiritually, there is no defense on where crypto takes us. Not that there's a lot of defense on basically most of the money we're used to. So maybe it's not that different. But if we ever want to get back to a world of reality, crypto is running in the opposite direction as fast as it can. And I'll say it again, the day we go to mostly crypto, the world will have agreed that currency does not equal wealth of any kind.
This is my own personal opinion. I think it was created by the bankers as a beta test, see how many people would do it, how they could control it. Been going on for what, 10 years at least now?
Yeah.
And it sure looks like now with the thing in Russia that they have control over it. So if you have crypto and then you do something like vote for Trump, they could just turn it off tomorrow. You see the control again. Who has control? Control means legal title to the asset. Obviously, somebody's got control, right?
Yeah, somebody does have control. We don't even know who created it. It's some stupid Japanese, you know, it's all a put up.
Right. That's just my opinion, but I agree.
Well, think about this, KL. You got crypto, and the only way you can use it is to go on a superhighway owned by multinational corporations. That is the only way you can ever use it. And people say, well, right, we'll go peer-to-peer. We'll do it. No, man, there's a freeway where that car's got to drive and you don't own it.
Right. So I don't understand why you got to use it. If you think you're bypassing the government, which is really the bankers, I think that's no way, shape, or form happening. They know exactly who's doing what.
That's proven through the idea of the blockchain, although I'm going to get 1,000 emails that I said that. By the way, yeah. Jason, we're going to have the blockchain expert. Do you know if that's gone forward to show people how horrendous use of the blockchain has been?
I don't know yet.
Well, I'll have to get with Rose. So do we feel like we've dropped anything? I think we've laid down some important ideas here. And what it comes down to is we are running headlong into a world that is openly 100% illusion, where the idea of rights is gone, the idea of even being an individual, a one, is gone, where, you know what, someday you're going to wake up, if we stay on the trajectory on, there's going to be no more saxophones in the world. You know why? Because there's going to be nobody left that knows how the hell to build a saxophone. But you're going to log on to the internet and there's going to be virtual saxophones that they'll give you for free. That's where we're heading, to complete imagination. And crypto and our inability to comprehend law and the idea of ownership, the ship called owner, not comprehending all these things is what's going to have greased the skids to allow us to go there. At some point, if we want a better world, we've got to get back to reality.
You're right. We've been domesticated like an animal. Okay. Made everything that makes easy, especially with the younger generation, they seem to go for it. It just means something's easier. I think we have to get this, to me, is a war between the artificial world and the real world. And we have to get back to the real world. Thus, we got to try and still do contracts with lawful money. Okay. We still got to try to do political status changes where it puts us in Article 3 land jurisdiction. We still, if we don't, and again, we had, remember, the last time I think we talked was about the Myriad case, about getting the shot, and that would turn you into a GMO. You know, there's that artificial world again. They want control of you in an artificial way. And the way they were going to think about, I believe, again, was through the shot to make you a GMO. Thus, now you're an artificial legal person, not a real sentient being, flesh and blood. Now they can get control of you. Again, control, like legal title to a trust again. It's all about the control aspect that they use.
All right. Let me wrap up some ideas here. I'm going to ask everybody, do you know of a government in the world or a clever scientist that can make a tree from scratch or a fish or a blade of grass or any of the things that we call nature?
No.
The answer to that is no. And the reason is because the creator owns it, made it, created it. We can't do it. This artificial world that's coming along, they made it. They can claim to be gods of that artificial system, and they made the shot that made you artificial. And these ideas, if you can follow along here, it's not just getting back to reality, but it's spiritually waking up to who are we? How did we get here? How is any of this possible? And when we start to answer those questions, there's a prayer, but we're going headlong into a world where some dark, dark individuals are going to claim godship over the system they've created. And part of what we've talked about here is a legal system that started it all. And we've had Kayal on, go back, listen to the episodes, what happened to us in 1933. So many people don't agree with me, but I don't comprehend how we could possibly get back to any world without gold and silver, because historically that's been what's been used to say, here, you want this, give me that, other than bartering. And I'm here to tell you, in a few years, you would have to be a freaking madman to give anyone gold or silver with crypto as payment, because that's the whole idea of crypto. Jason, anything you want to add?
Well, there's something I'd like to ask of KL, and that's, could you explain the process that Christopher Hauser is doing from your point of view and what's actually going on there with the trusts and all that?
Well, the 1098 or 1099A, I cannot tell you because I'm not familiar with it. My advice was, you know, to everybody and anybody who's come to me, I've had deluge with the same thing way before Hauser. There's somebody else out there promoting it also. So I've gotten the calls and the emails for about 2-3 months now about the 1099A. In essence, it still gets back to the idea, which everyone who's in this will tell you, that yes, a straw man was created by the state. But at the same time, bonds were taken out, so that they call that the estate. So there's these bonds out there that have been making money your whole life. That's what we call the estate or the accounts or the access to the private funds that everyone is looking for. Now, again, I will tell you that the only one that can do that is a beneficiary of a trust. So somehow, if it's working, which I don't know how he's doing it, I'll look at his YouTube thing later today, and I'll try to figure out and get back to you. I don't know how he's doing it. I don't know what form, and 1099A is an IRS form. So that already tells you that you're putting yourself into the Article I jurisdiction. You know what I mean? You're asking for either a refund, or some kind of, if you read the 1099A, something about abandoned property. Okay. Now that gets to the theory again about the afterbirth being left when you're by your parents, when you were born, the state says no one claimed it. It's abandoned property. So we took it. Okay. We're the custodians of that abandoned property. We're going to give it a name, the all caps entity. Then they take bonds out on it. Okay. And that's how the whole process starts in my mind. In my opinion, that's how it happens. Okay. So as we go along in life publicly, you really can't, you have access to those accounts, but the corporations are doing it. When you buy a car, when you buy a house, they're tapping your estate. Because everyone's using IOUs and worthless money, the corporations are hitting the Treasury Department for access to those funds. The electric companies are doing it. The cable companies are doing it. Your Verizon wireless company, your credit card banks, they're all tapping those estate accounts with the Treasury. That's how they're getting paid. Okay. Now they'll send you a statement. See if this makes even any sense, with a description of what happened. And the number at the bottom is positive. It's not negative like you owe it, but it's positive. So it shows you a statement. You think that means I owe it to them. So then you turn around and pay them again. So most of these corporations are, one, they get tapped into the trust account, first, and then you turn around and pay them second. So they end up paying twice. So what Hauser and a bunch of people are trying to do is just shortcut and trying to get someone like a car dealership to accept the 1099A so they can send it to the Treasury to get paid. Okay, so now you got to convince the recipient, car lot dealer, title company, if you're buying a house, you have to convince the recipient or the bank itself to send it through the system in order to get paid. Now, to me, I would think that you either got to give them instruction, have the instructions. I'm not sure they're going to know what to do with it. Maybe they will. Maybe they're big enough with a CEO. If it's a Toyota dealership, if it's nationwide, maybe there is a way they recognize it, know how to get paid. But you know as well as I do that they're not going to give the car unless they get paid one way or the other.
Now, Chris also uses a W-8-B-E-N.
Well, W-8-B-E-N is, I know what that thing is. That means you're right at the top of the document. It says beneficial owner of a trust for non-withholding in the United States. So that means you're not a tax liable entity, that you're the beneficiary. That's what W-8-B-E-N says right at the top of the form. And on that form that you submit and send to the IRS and Treasury, which actually is a part of my process, is telling them that you're the beneficiary of the straw man trust. Okay, that's what that form is doing. And it's their form. So one, they're going to recognize it and take it. All right. But after that, it's up to you to try to go from there. Does that make sense?
Now, if people are filing this instead of the W-2, can you indeed do that without getting into trouble?
You're still getting in trouble because a W-8-B-E-N means you're a non-resident alien. Okay. Now, a W-2 normally is for U.S. citizens. I'm sorry, W-4. W-2 is what you get at the end of the year. W-4 is what every employer wants you to fill out. Okay, and that's a contract that one usually states that you're a U.S. citizen and that you agree to withholding, which means you have to voluntarily consent for the business to take money out for income taxes and send to the government. You have to give them permission, because if you don't sign one, they cannot do it legally, and they would be liable if they did. So what people do is file a W-8-B-E-N in lieu of a W-4. Or you could just take the W-4 and write exempt. But again, once you start doing this stuff, do you have a passport out there that says on there that you check the box that you're a U.S. citizen? Do you have a bank account out there somewhere that you check that box that you're a U.S. citizen? Do you have a driver's license application in the system that says you check that box, I'm a U.S. citizen? So you can't, what we call doublespeak, by saying, well, here I'm a private citizen, but then all these other ones I've checked, I'm a U.S. citizen. You have to get yourself out of the system completely, otherwise they can come after you. Okay? So you have to clear up all of that stuff at the same time. It isn't just doing that where you work. There's other stuff that you need to undo in order to make that effective. Okay, so yes, again, we're partially true. Yes, you can submit a W-8-B-E-N in lieu of a W-4, but you better have done other things besides that to get yourself out of the system. You need to do a revocation of election with the IRS to tell them you're no longer going to file 1040 ever again, that you're not a U.S. citizen. Okay, so you have to get yourself out of the system before you can take benefits of the private trust system.
So when you put beneficiary on the driver's license, is that one of those other things, or is the motor vehicle code a separate thing from what we're talking about?
Well, again, I sent you a copy of my driver's license that says I stand beneficiary on, which means it's an acknowledgement that it's a trust account, just like Christopher said, right? Now, they assume you're the trustee. Trustee means you're the liable party, right, of that thing. I make the claim right away. I'm the beneficiary of that account. Okay, which means all I have is I'm using it. I have possession of the license and I'm using it. But of course, it's in my trust name. Okay, it's not mine. It's the state's, because they created it. He who creates controls, which means the state created it. Thus, they're the legal title holder of it. Okay, I'm just the beneficiary. I'm just the user of the darn thing. So I don't run around without plates on the car. I just register the car and the license, everything in the trust bank. So That's how I stay out of the public. I use the public because, again, I'm the beneficiary. I get use and possession of everything out there, right? I'm just delineating and specifying everywhere I go that I'm the beneficiary of all of this stuff. I'm not the trustee. I'm not the liable party. The government really is the liable party. In all of these trust agreements, in all of these trust accounts, the government is the trustee. But what they try to do after they've set this up is they try to get you to go, well, aren't you the trustee? All right. And if you say yes, now I'll tell you how they do that. Then you're going to jail. Okay. So when Chris went to jail, somehow he agreed to be the trustee of the trust. Now, how do they do that? How do they trick you into doing that, even though you're the beneficiary? All right. So when court started, case number 40501, 2019, Mr. Hauser, are you here? Are you Mr. Hauser? If he said the word yes, what he was asking in reality was, are you the trustee of the Christopher Hauser Trust? Okay. Because who defends a trust? When there's a claim on a trust, who has to defend the trust in court? A trustee. So when you say the word yes in court, that one word, you're saying I'm the trustee, which means not only am I going to pay, but I'm the guy that's guilty also. You're admitting guilt and you're going to pay both.
So hypothetically, if he had said no or said nothing, what would have happened?
Well, then he better start saying, I'm not the trustee, I'm the beneficiary. Okay. See, what a judge does, the thing about a judge has a claim against the trust in front of him. That's the charging instrument, whether it's a ticket, a felony, a misdemeanor. What's in front of him is a charge against the all caps decedent trust. So what is his job in reality? His job is to figure out, well, who's the trustee and who's the beneficiary? Who's going to pay for this today? Okay. So that really is his job. So that's why he'll ask you, unfortunately, he should ask the prosecutor, but he asks you first, are you Mr. Hauser? If you say the word yes, then you've said, I am the trustee. Okay. So what is another word for trustee? A defendant. Do you understand the word games here? Defendant in a court case is a trustee. That somehow you've agreed to be the trustee and not the beneficiary. So this is why, and he said it, you need to know trust law, right? Didn't he say that a couple times in his talk?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. So you have to understand everywhere you go, all of these trusts are going on. So am I either the beneficiary or the trustee? That's why you got to start researching, reading about trust law to figure out what they're doing to you. Okay.
So backing off from that aspect of it, when he goes to purchase a brand new vehicle,
yes,
is that technically illegal or is that actually a copacetic thing to do as long as you do the paperwork properly?
That's a great question. You're using government forms, which means you're putting yourself under their authority. So it better be done correctly. Now, it's a negotiable instrument of some type because obviously credit is going to get passed from one party to another. We would all agree on that. There doesn't seem to be Federal Reserve notes anywhere on the table, right? There just seems to be this piece of paper, 1099, and I don't know what else he might do, but somehow he's going to ask them to submit it to the government to get their account credited, right? So he's asking somehow with the government pay and put that money in our account. So who is the only person that can do that? Well, only a beneficiary can make a claim on that estate trust. Now, is it understood because he's doing a 1099? I don't know. I can tell you just because he signs it first comma or first dash, middle colon, last, that has nothing to do with it. And that was really, that's that syntax grammar junk when I would tell you don't pay attention to. What pays attention is when you say you're the beneficiary or you say you're the agent of record, that means beneficiary. If you use the word subrogee, surety, you know, these are words and what they know that mean you're on that beneficiary side, not the trustee side of the equation. All right. So one, I haven't seen one of them that he's filled out again. Maybe I'll look on his YouTube video to see what I could find out. And again, I can get back to you. But I think I'm just going to be honest. One, even if you do it right, that doesn't mean they're going to accept it. Okay. So I knew somebody that did what we call a bill of exchange, which is a negotiable instrument on the private side, and it went through. Once he made one, the Treasury made a worldwide to every bank any bill of exchange with this guy's name on it could be fraud. Okay. So what they did was prevented him from doing it again. Because even though it worked, they put out a warning to all banks in the nation that anything with this guy's name on it could be fraudulent. So even if you do it right and it goes through, hey, that's great. It might stop. You might not be able to do it again. It's all about convincing the recipient of who you're giving this stuff to somehow get it through the system correctly. And I don't know how they're doing it. So I can't respond with a for sure, yay, nay, or it's dangerous, whatever yet. Okay.
So in your opinion, the person agreeing to it, let's say the car dealer in this case, are they actually doing anything wrong technically, legally, or no?
I don't think they are, but if the system was mad at you, they're going to come after you, not the car dealer.
Well, the car dealership is going to be really pissed if they're going to have money taken away from them if they just sold you a $50,000 vehicle and now they're no longer getting paid for it and they don't have the vehicle.
Right. So, I mean, just common sense to me would tell you they're not going to let the vehicle off the lot till the money's in the account. I just can't imagine them go, oh, yeah, we'll send this in, no problem. Here's the keys of the car. See you later. I don't see that happening.
I would be surprised if places that do business in that way have not previously seen a trust of some sort used to pay for something.
Right. But here's how that normally happens, Crow, is you take the bill of sale and then you say, fill it out for me. We're both going to sign it and I'm going to send it to my trustee and then he's going to send you the money. That's how it normally works. Okay.
So what we're talking about is, let's say, let's just use a ridiculous example. A Bill Gates child wants to buy a vehicle and there's a trust set up for them because he's worth gazillions of dollars. That child could go to a dealership, be like, I want that new Mercedes. Give it to me now. Give me the paperwork and we'll sign off on it. And then the trust, of course, would pay for it because we know Bill Gates is worth gazillions of dollars.
But if I'm the car dealer, I'm still not going to give you the car until I get the payment from the trust. I just can't believe any car dealer would be naive enough to believe, one, you're his whatever relative, but going to give you the car before he gets the money. I just don't see it happening. That's just me.
So I remember him saying something about 45 days. So do you think he had to wait for that, like the 45 days to conclude?
I would assume that at the minimum, 30 to 60 days, absolutely. And that's, again, if they'll do it, if they'll put it through the process. Because first off, their lawyers are going to have to look at it. Hey, are we doing anything illegal here? Can we go ahead and send this on with us out committing fraud? So first, it's going to have to pass their smell test. And then, yes, okay, so they send it to whoever he tells them to. And then let's see what happens. And then if the money comes through, I'm sure he'll get the car.
Right. And apparently that's what happened. We're taking him at his word here.
Right.
Then it went through.
Right. Now, I will tell you that every single call I've had, and there have been a lot of them in the last 3 months, have all got to do with him doing it. I have not heard of anybody else doing this. And what makes anything valid is if it's repeatable, right, Crow? Repeatable.
That's a fact. That's what actually forms the thing we call a law, isn't it?
Right. So, and in science, you know me, I'm in science. In an experiment, you have to be able to repeat, or someone else has to be able to repeat it. That's what makes it valid. Not that just you can do it, but if somebody else can do it. So I have not heard of one, and I believe you, I know thousands of people in this movement. I have not heard of one other person that's been able to do it. So again, I'm not going to sit here and say he didn't do it. I'm going to just say proceed with caution.
And dot your I's and cross your T's if you really want to try it.
Absolutely. Now, let's think. Jason, think like you're the treasurer in the IRS, all right? Are you going to let this guy get on here and tell thousands of people every week if this goes through and how the first 100 people and it all goes through, they're going to tell 1,000 people. And inside of 2 weeks or less than a month, you'll have half the country doing it, wouldn't you?
We've discussed that very thing. And here's what might be happening is that just like with Shroud, the small stuff, they're dealing in so much money, so much everything, that the small stuff like this might indeed slip through the cracks, kind of a deal. But you start seeing the same kind of process coming through over and over and over again. Now, if they get wind of him, of who he is, now all of a sudden I think there's going to be a problem, and then they might wait for him to do enough stuff that they can have an excuse to go after him.
I totally agree. Because anybody that's ever, quote, accessed funds that I know, they make them sign an NDA, okay? So the first thing they want is your science, is not to tell everybody.
Which implies that it works.
Right. But the point is then if you go and start telling 1,000 people, now they'll tell you, for again, this is through word of mouth, you know, your family, small numbers, we don't care, but you can't get on radio show and tell 1,000, 5,000 people, and then they tell everybody, we'll take it, the privilege right back away from you. So that's how they protect the public. It's okay, they'll let it slide, they'll let stuff through, but they can't have everybody doing it. It will create utter banking chaos if no one had to pay for anything anymore, which is the way they really set up, but they're not going to let that happen. I know that for a fact. They're just not going to let it happen.
We've had this conversation. I mean, Jason, you and I have had this conversation umpteen times. It's been pretty clear. And I think I might even, I don't remember, did I ask it in the episode? You know, so one guy's done it. And by the way, you know, talk to me again in 10 years, you know, so we can see what's happened. But 1,000 people do it?
Right.
Come on. You don't think there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction?
They want you to go ahead and use it and ride off into the sunset. And that way you're happy, but everyone else doesn't know about it. They don't have a problem with that. At least that's how I would look at it if I was them.
Well, this is the heart of their scam, right? Like you can't be doing this stuff over and over and over again times 300 million. Then their scam collapses, right?
Correct. There's going to be a problem. Yeah. They're not going to let it happen. Whether they just refuse to accept him, they'll put the word out about his name like the other guy. There's a variety of ways they can shut you down, let alone arrest you and come up with a cockamamie charge. You know, and he's already been in prison once. So that tells you in a way that something he did previously, you know, he didn't have enough knowledge or he did something wrong. Because you could go to jail if you volunteer.
His claim is, well, there's a good point, but his claim is that the Supreme Court case in his state in early April, that these things will be, I don't know what the right word is, it overturned, something like that. So we will know more before too long.
Right. But what I'm telling you is the court gives you three times to rebut that you're the straw man. And if you don't rebut three times, you have volunteered to go to prison. One of them is when they ask your name. The two of them is they charge you. And the third one is when they sentence you. If you don't rebut, say, I'm not that guy, I do not consent, you have consented. So they give you, just biblically, they give you three shots at the apple, okay?
Is just sitting there saying, I'm not the trustee, I'm the beneficiary. If you just sat there and said, I'm not the trustee, I'm the beneficiary, is that sufficient?
Yes, because they could never get jurisdiction over you. See, this is the key. They don't have jurisdiction over the real man. They don't. They only have jurisdiction over the straw man, okay? Does that make sense?
Does that include violent crimes, harming another, things like that?
If you harm someone, yes, then they can charge you.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
The exception is if you harm someone or something, you are correct. So they have to get the jurisdiction from you. You have to volunteer and consent to it. That's the issue.
So what actually happens, if you happen to know, if you're in court and you say three times, you deny it, you decline it, I'm not the defendant, stop calling me the defendant, and all that kind of stuff, what then happens?
You won't go to jail and they'll drop the charges.
Have you ever seen that happen?
I haven't physically seen it happen. I've heard it to people that have done that and that gets done away with. In other words, they say, oh, we're going to have a meeting on this. I've got to have a sentencing hearing, blah, blah, blah. And then they never get called back. And then the charges are taken off the record and it just disappeared like a fart in the wind. That's what happened.
All right. Well, I think I've got my questions cleared up, Crow.
As always, there's so much to learn here, but you see, there's a whole world going on around us, everybody, and you can't just focus on the one flower that you're looking at. You've got to start to consider the flower in the context of the entirety of the area where you live your life and what's going on. This is the crypto thing that I'm always harping on. Crypto is the wrong way to go. Spiritually, it's the wrong way. In reality, it's the wrong way. And yet, because I said these words over and over, I will get the emails from people who refuse to step back and recognize anything more than the greed that they could be a bit richer than they were yesterday, which I would also argue, no, you're not. You're imagining you're richer and you might be able to buy a few more gumdrops for a while. The point is you are no richer in reality. The other thing is, think about what a world we would have if people being pulled up to the bench, the bar in front of the man, simply stood there and said all day long till they're blue in the face, "I'm not the trustee, I'm the beneficiary. I'm not the trustee, I'm the beneficiary." Just think what a world, you know, there would be huge holes blown in this elusive system that we're all participating in. But KL, is there anything you want to add before I wrap up?
Yes. Question for you. Who created gold and silver?
God.
The creator, God. It's real.
There's your answer.
And he gave us the privilege of using it.
Yeah, the beneficial title, use and possession of it.
You know what? That's kind of, I'm starting to think I got, you know, I always say at the zygote, you were granted the divine spark and free will. Were you granted beneficiaryship, if that's the right word,
yeah,
too?
I call it the sacred trust.
There it is.
And God. God was the creator, the grantor, the creator. He sent down Jesus, the trustee. He had to do a certain duty. He had to die so your sins would be redeemed. You get the benefit of what Jesus did, right?
I'm starting to say I'm missing, you know, what I always say is missing the third leg, because you are, in fact, beneficiary of this creation that was provided so you could live.
Right. Now, to get the benefits of the trust, you have to make a claim. You have to believe in God. Don't you? If you want to go to heaven?
Well, you're not going to go far in a system unless you believe in it.
That's what I'm saying. You got to make the claim that the same system they've set up, this whole thing is trust law, God's law. This whole world is. You just got to see it for really what it is. It's amazing if you can see it.
Gail, do you want to give out anything for contact info? Anything you want to say on your behalf?
Sure. You can give my email, KL. Freedom, FREEDOM 748@gmail.com.
Okay, I'm assuming we might see you in comments if there's links or questions.
Yes, absolutely, no problem.
All right. Hey, thank you so much for giving us this time. I mean, we literally, Jason, Rose, and I called KL. I got to be careful what I say, Jason.
Well, before you even did that, I immediately was started email. As soon as I listened to it, which it took 2 days, as soon as I listened to it, then I emailed you.
Right. Right.
Because I knew you'd have questions. Yes.
Well, the point is we called you and an hour later you were recording with us. So I've got to thank you for that. That's pretty cool to be able to deal with issues in such a speedy manner. But there it is, everybody. There's a little bit over an hour maybe of episode 393.5 with Jason Lindgren and KL. And the thing about everything we talked about today is you can blow this out to spiritually mean something. You can blow this out to logically mean something. You can apply what we've talked about to common sense to help you figure out these problems that come up in life that seem unsolvable. It's a big deal. Law is a big deal. There's a reason why the Bible was implicated into these systems of men. It's just unfortunate that the men who did it at some point decided they were going to take over the whole enchilada. For us to change, we've got to get back to common sense and reality. Without gold and silver, I really don't know how we do that. And I know people will beef, but that's just my point of view. There it is. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.